Hello, Bill Diamond. This is Herb Plambeck presenting his last broadcast from the 7th Army area. I'm finding it difficult to say goodbye to the men of this great army. I've had the privilege of seeing them accomplish so much in these past 6 weeks, fighting their way ahead against some of the hardest resistance on the Western Front, overcoming obstacles of rugged terrain and weather, going fearlessly into areas where the enemy was expected to make its final stand. These observations have given us a keen sense of pride and devotion to the men of the 7th, and makes for reluctance to say farewell. Now that the prayer for victory has at last been answered, it would be nice to be with these men in their hour of triumph, to recall some of the countless achievements in their march from the shores of southern France, over mountains, through Alsace, across the Rhine, through the Siegfried, into parts of industrial Germany, where I first saw them in action, then the bloody battle for Nuremberg, and across the Danube, the liberation of many of our prisoners of war and enslaved people, the push into Austria, the taking of Munich, and then later, Berchtesgaden, and then the significant meeting with our 5th Army down in the Brenner Pass. And finally, of course, that greatest day of all, VE Day. Yes, there would be much to visit about, though it must be added, many of the men do not care to relive some of those experiences. Warm friendships have been formed in the time we've had with the 7th. It would be fun to renew that comradeship, but time decrees otherwise. Our orders here have expired, and there is other work to be done. Then, too, this is the first step on the trip for home, and all the precious things home means to all of us. I can't leave this front, though, without one more expression, one I hesitate to make, but one I feel I should. It's nothing more nor less than an apology that I have not done more for the men here and for their families. There have been so many requests I could not fill, to look up men, to visit graves, to go to prison camps. So many thousands of your men I could not see or did not find. So many stories I missed or couldn't get. So many letters that could not be written. So much that had to be left undone. To many of you, it must seem I've been remiss in my duties, indifferent to my obligation. Whatever disappointments may have been caused, I could only do my best. There was not one day in which my work measured up to my hopes. First, you must recognize that men on an army front are scattered very far and wide. Transportation problems on a front as active as ours likewise are an important factor, and were so in my failures. The countless miles of winding, narrow, rough, often bomb-cratered roads, often with endless convoys moving on them, many times with bridges still out, sometimes with the danger of mines still there. All this made it nearly impossible at times to reach our destination. Then, too, in flaming war, it's not always possible for a correspondent to go just where and when he pleases. Not when other, much more capable men also want transportation. Then, too, the way our boys moved was another explanation for not seeing more of them. Time and again, we would go travel hard to reach some division, only to find they'd moved another 20 kilometers just an hour before. Then there were those times when they were in contact with the enemy, and you can't take time out for visits then. And there were also times when the Iowans I had hoped to see had just been moved to another section or to a hospital only a little while before. And there were other disappointments. Radio programs, for instance, on which I worked many hours, lost by some sudden turn in the fortunes of war. How many of your boys I've seen, I cannot say. There was no time to keep track. Whatever the number, it was far short of the ambition, and I worked for every single one of them. The reward seen in their appreciation, though, has been worth all and more of the effort, though it hurts to realize I did not do better. This is your war correspondent, Herb Plambeck, hoping these last weeks in Europe will enable me to do just a little better. And now returning you again to a man who has done very, very wonderful, and that's Bill Diamond.
Yes, WQV. Harmony. Okay, do that first spot over again. Talk up, then give a 30-second warning. Okay. Okay, fine. Hello, NBC. Hello, NBC. This is MCI. We're going to repeat that first spot for you. We'll repeat that first spot for you in 15 seconds from now.
Hello, WHO. This is your war correspondent reporting once more from the Austrian Germany sector, where many of your sons and husbands are still on duty. I realize that war references now are largely just an anticlimax. At the same time, though, comments about your men continue to be in order. In this report, the last one I'll be able to bring you from this area, we have the names of a number of Midwesterners seen the past few days. Needless to say, they're a grateful lot now that the European fighting is over. Although it must be added hastily, all of them wonder what's next. The fact is, none of the men here feel the war is over. They know it won't be until the job in the China Pacific area is likewise finished. All are sweating out, as the saying goes, the Japanese part of the war. All hope they'll have at least a 30-day visit home before they're asked to move on somewhere else. And since the point system and several other discharge eligibility announcements were made recently, a goodly number of men, especially those with African as well as European service, regard their chances to get home as good. Going and staying home, of course, continues to be the big goal. And with that hope, answer, that's about the future. Some of the men are a bit pessimistic. Many soldiers, though, look to a return to civilian life with much anticipation and quite a lot of optimism. Captain Francis Miller, with an armored field artillery unit, whose folks live on Logan Avenue in Des Moines, and who has well over the minimum 85 points toward a discharge, says the future looks good to him. He plans to take some special training in sales work. Captain Miller believes there'll be plenty of buyers, and there ought to be a lot to sell in the years just ahead. An O-line member of the Rainbow Division, Corporal Leonard Odegaard, doesn't have enough credit for a discharge, but just the same, he's looking forward to settling down after the war's final end, and has plans for going into poultry and hatchery work. A military police Tech 5, Lewis Rice of Mason City, where his wife lives, when asked about the future, said, "That's a good question." His opinion is that conditions may be very different when the majority of men get home. And until then, no one can plan on anything. Corporal Don Weiss of Everly, with a field artillery unit here, I'm glad the shooting is over so he won't have to worry about his gas truck blowing up anymore, says he'd like to become one of Uncle Sam's mail carriers after the war. Men who are not going to be at all surprised if they see China before they return to civilian life include good-natured Tech 4 Jerome Brecha of Cedar Rapids in communications work here, who had just counted up his points when I saw him and was four short. But he was still smiling. The same goes for Sergeant Harris Weideman of Fort Dodge, now at work at a landing field, whose total is just exactly one short of the 85 minimum. He also did some joking about his lot. Sergeant Weideman made no mention of it, but he's the holder of a Bronze Star, won for his service to airmen under enemy fire and other adverse conditions. His lieutenant, Clifford Kinney, whose wife is a WHO evening news listener at Elk City, Oklahoma, says Weideman has never once failed in having planes ready for the pilot. Incidentally, Kinney has plenty of points. He holds the air medal with 8 clusters, more than 300 missions made over enemy territory. However, like most of the other officers and men who have the points, Kinney is not definitely counting on getting home. too many other factors must be considered, he says. In that same category is Sergeant Richard Drake, whose folks are in Cedar Rapids. He was at a show when I called on him, but he didn't seem to mind the interruption, even though he hasn't seen many pictures in recent months. Corporal Don Lonergan, whose wife and two-year-old son, whom he has never seen, are waiting for him at Boone, also wonders when he'll get home. He has a total of 108 points, is a combat engineer now stationed near some 70,000 German prisoners of war. Lonergan told me of two buddies, Tech 5 Steve Kirkman of Des Moines and Private First Class Harold Traveler of Dubuque, along with other Iowans in the 20th Airmen, went down Tech 5 Jack Cooper of Arizona, who is with the Cooper Quartet on several WHO barn dance programs, and who wants regards to Stan. Private Laverne Adams of Corning sums it up for a lot of men when he says, we still have another war to win. And Private First Class Gerald Vandenover of Old Wine speaks for all when he says, all I want is to get home. This is Herb Plambeck returning you to WHO.
Hello, NBC. That's all we have for you. Thank you very much, NBC. Hello, WQ.